JC Corcoran Podcast.
Here's Lance.
Ooh, that's a bit of a drive, Montgomery City.
Mm-hmm.
All right, westbound 64, Slow Ball
Avenue. I know the guy I had dinner with, the guy who owns the IGA store in Montgomery City.
You're kidding me.
Everybody's got to be famous for something.
You're I got a ticket in Montgomery City.
He's one of he's Dal Maxville's best friend. These guys have known each other for like 50 years or something like that.
But I mean, he owns an forget about Dal Maxville. He owns an IGA store.
IGA store.
What else is there?
That's incredible.
That?
I mean, that's
he wants olives. He can,
he's got them, man.
He's got them.
He doesn't have to pay for them. How cool is that? Honey, get me a loaf of bread. All right, I'll be right back.
They're hometown proud at IGA.
That's right.
Honey, give me a loaf of bread. Okay, I'm dropping back. Go that's long. Right.
Go deep. Go deep. What a great gig.
Okay, go down to the soup aisle and turn left. I'll hit you.
Although it's like anything else, wouldn't you be inclined to just turn into a small condominium by eating everything off the shelves?
Now,
also,
see,
I don't think there's a tremendous profit margin in an IGA store in Montgomery City.
It's the only thing going.
Yeah, what if it's the only game in town?
Grocery stores in general, though, don't have big profit margins.
No.
I tend to differ with that a little bit, actually. Those
what do you know about this?
End caps.
I beg your pardon?
End caps.
Ask for them by name. Is that Nabisco make those?
No, and they're delicious. Cheesy end caps. When you go to the grocery store and they've got the big displays on the end of the aisles.
Those are the impulsive buys.
You know what I'm talking about? When you go through an aisle and then on each end, they've got a big display.
Whatever's on sale.
Right.
They pay for those displays. They just don't get them. They pay for them. And they pay.
Remember when Tom Seif came in from AB? Everything is calculated.
Monumental.
Where every placement of everything is.
Very big money.
I'm with Schlanger. I thought I remembered hearing that the profit margin at grocery stores is just barely.
The profit margin on the items that they sell is not that good.
Yep.
But the shelf space is where they make their money.
Hmm.
You know, there's only so much shelf space in the I got a name for it. It was on 2020.
Shelf space.
No. When you go in and say you've got a product and you want to sell your product and you go to them and you say, okay, I'd like to sell this new chili that I've just invented. It's in a can. They say, okay, that'll be $20,000.
They say, hey, that's a highway.
You give them.
You ever dump a bag of chili into a bag of corn chips? Oh, there's a highway.
You pay them your 15 or 20 grand, whatever they ask for, and then you get your shelf space. They just don't give it to you.
By the way, Mark, you kind of just grazed over this. Just slow down there.
I'm excited.
Chili in a can? Really?
In a can.
Maybe three ways. KSD, you're on the air. Hi.
Yeah, close is wrong. A profit margin at grocery stores runs typically 1% to 2%.
That's what I thought.
Profit margin on the food, on that, but the end caps and all that, they got to pay for that.
How do you know?
The bottom line of the grocery store after it's all said and done is 1% to 2%, and they make it on volume.
Well, okay.
So take that, Close.
So what? They're still making a ton of money.
So in other words, what you're saying is that these end caps that Close is talking about, that would be the difference between going under and having a 1% or 2% profit margin.
Sure.
Okay. Why would somebody be in a grocery store business if the profit margin is only 1% or 2%?
Because it's fun.
They do a huge volume.
Yeah.
because it's fun.
You can run through the produce department naked if you want. I mean, how cool is that?
Free green beans.
If you're Mr. Whipple, you can squeeze all the Charmin you want.
I did a story with him once, too.
Man, you are just loaded with
Mr.
totally
tie-in.
Boring information.
Honest to God, Mr. Whipple and I hit out in a Schnook store in North County. No, I'm serious.
Do we want to go any further
right
with this
there.
One?
Just stop and right there.
You guys make fun of me.
And you know what he does? He puts on that blue smock and those little glasses, though. Mm-hmm. Those reading glasses.
Yeah. Is he wearing pants?
Yes.
That's all he had on was a blue smock. Time for that exam, Mr. Whipple.
And and I put on my rubber gloves.
That's right. On aisle four.
They're so flexible, you can pick up a dime.
That's right.
Clean up.
Squeeze.
So, and he gets a big shopping cart full of Charmin, and he starts pushing the cart through the grocery store. And he waits for these, somewhat matronly looking women to say, "You're Mr. Whipple."
Damn,
and that's
what?
Exactly what he did. And we hid with a camera at the end of the aisle, right near Mark, the end caps.
The end caps.
And we waited for him to come down. And sure enough, these 60-year-old women were throwing themselves at Mr. Whipple. It was the funniest thing I've ever seen in my life.
What a party animal.
The guy.
So in other words, you did a story on Mr. Whipple cruising for chicks.
Right.
Pretty much it.
And the amazing part is he got more chicks than you did. Whipple outscored you.
I got the spillover.
That's right. Hey, Mama.
Whipple's like, wait till I get the produce. They're all over me.
They're out of their mind.
No, I'm just getting warmed up.
Happy to see you again.
Don't be nervous. Don't be rocky. You're a teenage guest is jockey now.
And let me begin by wishing you a beautiful look.
Did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all before? It's like
Friday, November 18th, 2022, 88 days until pitchers and catchers report to Jupiter, Florida. How you doing, kids? You're at jconline.com. A little plug here. We will close out today's podcast with a great conversation with Jeff Faulkner, who's put together this Mr. Blue Sky thing, which is going to have a performance on Thanksgiving Eve, next Wednesday night at Del Mar Hall. There's tickets still available, and this is just a remarkable tribute band that he's put together. And we're going to talk about it a little bit. This will be my third time seeing that show, and I can't wait on the night before Thanksgiving. These snow totals for Western New York are approaching biblical proportion. They've already moved the football game that was supposed to be played in the snow. And again, my friends in Buffalo, and I still have many, are using this opportunity to remind city leaders how stupid they are for not only building an open-air stadium in Buffalo, New York, where it snows almost every day during the fall, the late fall, and the winter, but they also built it at the south end of town, which is where the snow belt is. I talked about this yesterday, the fact when I lived in Tonawanda, which is at the north end of the city, a lot of times there'd be nothing, and then you'd drive a half an hour south to the ballpark, and you'd have like zero visibility. So you build an open-air stadium that's bad enough, and then you put it in the south towns, well, at least close to the south towns, as they refer to them in Buffalo. It just doesn't make any sense. So they're going to play that game in a neutral site in Detroit. But here's John Fuller here.
Lifted, and again, 1 to 3 feet of snow, 5 feet of snow, not out of the question. That's about up to my chin, and you can see the heavy snow bands.
Up to my chinny chin chin. And you know you're in trouble when Jim Cantore from the Weather Channel shows up, and he's been there since yesterday. Our weather is just going to be very, very cold here for a couple of days and especially nights. And then actually, next week looks pretty decent with highs in the 50s. Last night, the Blues blew it and then came back, forced overtime. Then in the shootout, they win it 5-4. And after that horrible losing streak, they've actually strung a couple together. Now, speaking of ice, Steinberg Ice Rink at Forest Park opens up tomorrow. I don't think they'll have any trouble maintaining the ice. Oh, by the way, the new St. Louis Blues jerseys aren't blue. They're gold. There's like 10% blue. They're not known as the St. Louis Golds. Whoever had this idea apparently forgot what the name of the team is, which of course has a dual meaning anyhow because of the music and the color, but obviously the color blue isn't... Never mind. Just never mind. My pal Trish Gazelle, standing outside in the cold yesterday for Old Newsboys Day. I remember being sick every Christmas because, you know, we'd be out there, it'd be 14 degrees and we were hawking newspapers. And I kept asking, why don't you do this in July? And I, well, tradition. It's like tradition. You know, the guys making the decisions were not the people standing on the fucking street corner selling newspapers when it's 14 degrees. Real easy to give an answer like tradition when you're not the one who's freezing their ass off. Speaking of gold, and we were, it's interesting how all these stories are tying together. Congratulations to Paul Goldschmidt. Even though he laid a big fat egg in the playoffs, he had a tremendous season, and I think his Christmas is going to be especially nice, given the fact that in Goldschmidt's contract, and by the way, to the announcers, you don't have to call him Goldie every single time. His name is Paul Goldschmidt. Say Goldschmidt just once in a while. Goldie. It's a toe. Anyhow, he gets a $1.5 million bonus being named the MVP. And speaking of gold, and here we go again with all the stories tying together, they're going to put a gold baseball glove on top of the Westport Gold Tower as Rawlings. And those Rawlings people, they're good folks. I remember this was back in the late 90s. And I forget what it was. We were doing something, some sort of charity thing. And I said, I've got a couple of gloves or bats or something like that, especially bats. You know, we can give them to this organization involving kids. My memory is not serving me very well, but it was just some sort of charitable thing that we were involved in. And we were like, you know, if you got some bats and balls and stuff like that, you wouldn't believe it. They gave us like 100 bats. And they came down with all these... all these gloves and mitts from like the 30s and 40s, artifacts from what baseball gloves and mitts looked like back during that time. That's why you can't really talk about fielding percentages and stuff like that, compare modern day to that era, because they were using things that looked like an oven mitt. There's a player the Cardinals had for a while by the name of Lance Johnson, and we had developed a relationship with Lance. We had him in the studio a couple of times. He ended up going to the White Sox, playing right field, and he was wearing a thing on his hand that looked like a bushel basket. Now, I'm used to big gloves. As a little kid, I always had an adult glove, and I looked ridiculous out there, but you couldn't talk to me because that glove had been used in the major leagues by my uncle, who was a pitcher for the Chicago Cubs back then. And he would use a glove for 6 months and then give it to me. And then he'd start using another glove at the All-Star break, and I would use his used glove, which was already broken in and everything. This little 8-year-old kid, standing at second base with a glove that was almost as big as I was. But anyhow, the Rawlings people are going to move in there. They're going to have like some sort of a, what they call, an experience and everything. And I think that's a great idea. They're trying to pump a lot of activity back into Westport. I have very, very extremely fond memories of that building. A couple of unfond memories. KTRS is in there. But, when I first moved to St. Louis back in the mid-80s, we would go out there for those Westport comedy nights. We'd have like Jerry Seinfeld and Sam Kinison and stuff like that. I would MC all those shows. And, a lot of times we would do 4 shows in 2 days. And so I was out there a lot, and I would do the introduction, I would watch the show, and then I didn't need to see it anymore because I'd already seen it. And that was sort of something that people didn't understand about stand-up comedians, is they do the exact same act with the exact same nuances and pauses and applause lines and the whole thing. They do that same show over and over and over and over and over again. So once you've seen it, you don't need to see it again. And so I would just roam around Westport, and oh my God, back in the 80s, if you were around, you remember was there a lot of activity around there. You go in there on a Friday, Saturday night, that was the place to be. Of course, Casa Gallardo in there, I think Aunt Annie's or some sort of pretzel place. They had a lot of novelty shops and everything, ice cream places. And also I liked the idea that they had a lot of parking, and they do have a lot of parking. And it was, it wasn't free, but they're trying to recapture all of that. I wish them well. I think that's a great idea. I'm sad that the theater isn't there anymore. That's, because the Funny Bone came in there and expanded and knocked out the wall, the whole thing. But that In the Round theater there at Westport was really, really cool. Oh, back to the blues again. If somebody could tell Joey Vitale, I think does a good job. Kerber and Vitale, that's a good play-by-play team. Those guys are good. Especially Curbs. Curbs is a good guy on top of it. But Joey, the word's not lackadaisical. It's one of those things that people have a tendency to mispronounce. But if you're going to be on the radio, get it right. It's lackadaisical, not lackadaisical. Somebody, if you see Joey on the street, tell him that, would you please? And then I don't know what to tell the people at KMOX. You get what you pay for, and they must not be paying much for the sports director job over there these days. Now, I try to be fair. And they bring a guy in. I guess they brought him in maybe like June, July, somewhere like that, to do Sports Open Line and be like the linchpin of the entire sports operation. And they brought him in from, I don't know where, but he's there now. And I wouldn't want to be judged by my first month or two on the air at a new job. And so I don't do that either. But I think it's fair now. And he sort of sucks. And then yesterday, this.
They start with trying to, have O'Reilly with Kyrou.
Like I said, you get what you pay for, and they must not be paying much. America's sports voice. Have a nice day. Let me get this stuff off my phone. What I do during the course of the day, I'll do screenshots of stories that I say to myself, all right, make sure that when you do the podcast, you look at your pictures and your screenshots. Now, I was talking about this, maybe a month or two ago. What you got here is your fashion. and you're fashioned by women. And as taboos continue to disintegrate, I mean, it would have been the most embarrassing thing in the world if a woman shows up on the red carpet somewhere and has camel toe. Or wears a dress that turns out to be too sheer, and, you know, she shows up on the red carpet, and they're like, we can see right through it. We can see everything you got. Well, they're doing it on purpose. Now, after years of yoga pants, we've had them around for a while, then they started doing lighter color, thinner fabric yoga pants, leaving very little to the imagination, particularly when it comes to a woman's posterior, where you get that smooth contour of the... what's the medical term? I think it's keister. You get that smooth contour. And then somebody said, no, I think we can make these even more obscene. So now they have these ones that actually go right up into the crack of your ass, and you're walking around going, I get Paige Spiranak, the golfer, who is one of the most beautiful women on earth, is doing it. She's got a video out right now. You can look for it. It is a, she's in a pink outfit, head to toe pink, and she turns around, and the fabric is it's almost like it's being gravitationally pulled into her butthole. It's unbelievable. And so with all of this going on, a couple of months ago, I said, what do you think the natural progression is? The natural progression of this is that at some point, somebody's just going to show up naked. You know, one of those big fashion shows in New York, you know, where they, like during Fashion Week, have all these runway models. Well, sure enough, the Met Gala is that huge thing they have every year where people wear admittedly outrageous outfits. It's almost like who can come up with the most over-the-top outfit without going completely overboard, like Lady Gaga wearing a dress made out of salami or something. And sure enough, I get up this morning, and from page six, it says Kendall Jenner considered attending the Met Gala topless. You know what that means? That means that at some point, she's going to do it. Ticketmaster. They've been getting away with murder for years. Now they think Congress might start looking into it. Who knows? But Ticketmaster says they expected 1.5 million verified Taylor Swift fans on the site. 1.5 million. They got 14 million people trying to get Taylor Swift tickets. Live Nation chairman says we could have filled 900 stadiums. Pete Davidson continues his reign of terror with Emily Ratajkowski this time. Well, now, apparently, Pete Davidson was friends with her now ex-husband before they got divorced, and he started hooking up with that. Violates the bro code, brother. My daughter was watching Home Alone again last night. She's turning into Howard Hughes with Ice Station Zebra. I'm going to go in there. Her fingernails are going to be like a foot and a half long. She would have bathed in a month and a half. I'm down with OCD. Yeah, you know me. When Macaulay Culkin goes to the grocery store, his bill is $19.83. Adjusted for inflation now, the total would have been $44.40. That's important to somebody somewhere. Every year right about this time on Facebook, and I come out of Facebook jail tomorrow, I do an updated version of my Planes, Trains, and Automobiles background story. And I just sort of freshen it, put a couple of new things in. It just seems like every year something else is revealed about the making of that movie, which, of course, if you were around in the late 1980s, you remember that John Candy and Steve Martin shot a lot of that stuff in St. Louis, particularly around the airport. And so, like I said, every year a little bit more comes out, and I got some really, really interesting updates. I'll be publishing that on my Facebook page next week. By the way, we're going to do podcasts Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. Then we'll take off Thursday and Friday and then be back the following week. But at least for the first half of the week, we'll have stuff for you. And one of the things that we will present for you next week is our conversation with the guy we just gave him a name. We gave him the name Knuckles. This is a guy who is a professional burglar for something like 30 years, and then had an attack of conscience and went totally straight and started copping to the whole thing and explaining how he did it and what stupid things people do that they think are tightening the security around their house, which in fact are having no impact whatsoever. It is one of the most, I mean, you know, what I've been doing this, 38 years in St. Louis and another 10 before that. So I've been doing this almost 50 years. In 50 years of broadcasting, this is in the top five conversations I ever had. And the thing about it was, it wasn't an interview that we set up. It was just a guy who called in while we were talking about home security around the holidays. And the guy was driving around somewhere in Creve Coeur, I believe. And he was listening to us and figured, eh, you know, these guys, really, they don't know what they're talking about. I did this professionally for 3 decades. I'll just call in. And the guy called in. We had him on the air. It was like a 25-minute call. I have it edited down to about half of that. But I am telling you, what an amazing conversation with this guy. So we're going to play that for you next week before we take a little time off for Thanksgiving. That call, by the way, was apparently fascinating to more people than just the four of us in the studio that day and our listeners, because our listeners that day included a police department in West County that was listening, and they called us after the show and said, did you get that guy's number? Because they wanted to talk to him, too. We could solve a lot of cases. But I'm telling you, don't miss this next week. Don't miss it. It was on this date in 1998. My second stint at 93.7 KSD came to an end. Big deal. And then, let's see, tomorrow it's 1993, right? Okay, 93. I was in New York for the screening and the interviews with Dana Carvey and Mike Myers for Wayne's World 2. Now, it used to be, and to a large extent it still is, that if you see a movie title that has a little number at the end or a Roman numeral, that's really, really bad news. Avoid that movie like the plague. There are a couple of notable exceptions, including The Godfather, but for the most part, it's bad enough that the movie is Stop or My Mom Will Shoot, but then if you get, you know, Stop or My Mom Will Shoot 2, run in the opposite direction of the theater, if you know what's good for you. But Wayne's World 2 was a damn good movie, and it was in the midst of the whole issue between Dana Carvey and Mike Myers, who were feuding over this whole Austin Powers character and everything, and I guess they got it basically worked out now, but I don't really think that their relationship was ever the same. When Mike Myers does the Dr. Evil character, he is really doing the voice of Saturday Night Live overlord Lorne Michaels. Dana Carvey said that, you know, I was doing that imitation before anybody, and you sort of copied it, and you don't do that in comedy. You don't steal somebody else's material. Mike Myers didn't see it that way, and like I said, there was a they weren't talking to each other for a long time. People's feelings get hurt. Hoda Kotb revealed on the Today Show that her partner, Jenna Bush Hager, doesn't wear underwear. Yeah, she's fascinating, isn't she? Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction ceremony with Pat Benatar, Duran Duran, Eminem, Eurythmics, Dolly Parton, Lionel Richie, and Carly Simon. Saturday night on HBO, 7 o'clock. Sunday Night Football, Chargers from Los Angeles hosting the Kansas City Chiefs. Wayne Brady hosts the American Music Awards Sunday on ABC. Elton John Live, Farewell from Dodger Stadium, that's on Disney Plus Sunday night. Jimmy Fallon tonight has Samuel L. Jackson. Bill Maher has Matthew Perry and Laura Coates from CNN. Tim Allen visited Jay Leno in the hospital, says he's doing great. The trailer is out for the movie Paint, which is coming out in April with Owen Wilson as Bob Ross. I'm willing to check that out. Black Panther, Wakanda Forever, has surpassed the $400 million globally mark. Steven Spielberg is making a new movie about Frank Bullitt, the character Steve McQueen played in the 1968 classic Bullitt. Bradley Cooper is going to star in that. Quentin Tarantino says he's doing a TV series sometime next year. It turns out Tom Brady and Gisele Bündchen had a charitable foundation that has not apparently been that charitable. Allegedly. Watch for that story to develop. It was 44 years ago today. I was working in Lansing, Michigan, home of Michigan State University. It was while Magic Johnson was playing ball there, by the way. It was fun covering that back in those days. It was not fun covering the Reverend Jim Jones. On this date, 1978, 44 years ago, the phrase, he's drinking the Kool-Aid, was born. Sure, the Kool-Aid people loved that. Walk the Line, the Johnny Cash movie with that great scene with Reese Witherspoon and Joaquin Phoenix with her on stage where he forces her into the duet. Let's go all time. time's a-wasting. 17 years ago today, 2005. And Michael Douglas married Catherine Zeta-Jones on this day 22 years ago. He's older than her dad. All right, birthdays. Damon Wayans, 40. Nassim Pedrad from Saturday Night Live, 41. I liked her. She was very, very good. She did the Ariana Huffington thing. It was dead on. David Ortiz, Big Papi, 47. Chloe Sevigny, 48. Megyn Kelly, over 52. Romany Malco. God, is this guy funny. He rent this movie, Baby Mama. Baby Mama, it's a Steve Martin, Tina Fey, Greg Kinnear, Amy Poehler, and Romany Malco. Even with that cast, Romany Malco steals every scene he's in. Man, is that a funny movie, Baby Mama. Owen Wilson, 54. Gary Sheffield, formerly with the San Francisco Giants, 54. Kevin Nealon, Saturday Night Live, 69. Nice guy, by the way. Mr. Belding is 72. Dennis Haskins, Linda Evans is 80. Birthdays for tomorrow. Adam Driver, 39. Jodie Foster, 60. Meg Ryan, 61. Allison Janney, 63. Ann Curry, formerly of the Today Show, 66. Ahmad Rashad, Bobby Moore, 73. Calvin Klein, 80, and Ted Turner, 84. Sunday, it is Sean Young at 63. It has here Ace Ventura, Pet Detective, but how about No Way Out? All right, 63. Bo Derek, 66. Joe Walsh, 75. Veronica Hamill from Hill Street Blues, 79. Norman Greenbaum, Spirit in the Sky, 80. Dick Smothers, 83. And our president, Joe Biden, turns 80 on Sunday. If you are looking to do something special on the night before Thanksgiving, boy, do we have something for you.
The sun is shining in the sky. There ain't a cloud in sight. It's stopped raining. Everybody's in a play. And don't you know, it's a good and fun day. Hey.
St. Louis musician Jeff Faulkner is the big boss man for Mr. Blue Sky, the ELO tribute band performing at Del Mar Hall next Wednesday night. Let's just start right there. As a full-time working musician, are things back to normal yet?
Pretty much so, yeah. I mean, we had a couple of months there in 2020 where things shut down for a few months, and then slowly started to come back, and now I would say things are 100% back to normal.
All right, so the night before Thanksgiving, and by the way, to digress, some of the best parties I think I've ever been to have been on the night before Thanksgiving. I don't know if that's been your experience too, but I can remember some stuff under a pool table or something, if my memory serves right. me correctly. Yeah, well, has that been your experience as well?
I've had a few years like that, yeah. I mean, they don't call it Skanksgiving for nothing.
Well, Mr. Blue Sky is blowing up the Ticketmaster website just like Taylor Swift. So let's talk a little bit about it. It is the night before Thanksgiving. It is Del Mar Hall, which is where I saw you guys the very first time. This seems like a dumb question because the last show I saw you guys do, you played basically the entire ELO catalog. I'll go ahead and ask anyhow, is there anything new that people who are coming to the show on the night
absolutely,
before Thanksgiving
yeah,
will check
absolutely.
Out?
Absolutely. Yeah, we've probably the last 3 or 4 months or so, we've worked in quite a few new songs. Some stuff off of the Discovery album, a few songs off the Out of the Blue record, a couple songs off of the Xanadu soundtrack. That Xanadu soundtrack is really what kind of got me into ELO as a kid. One of my relatives was showing me that movie. I just remember being really connected to that music, and I had no idea who it was. You know, that B-side of that Xanadu soundtrack, which is all ELO songs, is just absolutely brilliant.
Maybe at some point you could do the song Magic and put together an Olivia Newton-John tribute band.
The song Xanadu, which is the song that she sang, you know, we had a show maybe about a month after she passed away and was able to kind of pay tribute to her by doing that song.
You got to change wigs for that, huh?
I'll just have one of the girls sing it.
So in addition to the shows that you've been playing in St. Louis with Mr. Blue Sky, the show's been going on the road a couple of times. How's that been?
We've been up in Chicago.
Great crowd up there, great turnout.
You're the front man, obviously. Got like, I don't know, something like 11 people on stage, and they got lighting, you got the effects. How much is going on behind the scenes that the crowd has no idea that it's going on?
Quite a bit. The production that we bring out is pretty extensive. And we work with a production company here in St. Louis called Arch City. Kevin Kaywater, who is our lighting tech, he'll bring out
a couple guys with him, and they're there, you know, usually like 3-4 hours before we even show up for sound check, setting stuff up. It's going to be usual full-on light show, lasers, all that stuff, video wall. Kind of got to have that when you're, you know, doing a tribute to Electric Light Orchestra. The word light is in there, so.
It's the operative word, yeah.
I mean, our main goal, obviously, is to have it sounding as close to those records as we possibly can.
Which brings up my next question. Out of everything that you're going to be playing at Del Mar Hall the night before Thanksgiving, what is the most difficult ELO song to replicate?
None of these songs are easy by any stretch of the imagination. I kind of didn't know what I was getting myself into when I started this thing. Probably two songs that stick out to me are Fire on High, which is an instrumental we do, and it's always the climax of the show. That's the one that the crowd just really like responds to. We do another song off of the Xanadu soundtrack called I'm Alive, and it's got some quirky things going on musically, and it's not easy to sing.
I recall, oh my God, this had to be 15 years ago, maybe even more than that. And I thought the whole idea of tribute bands was on the level of something you'd hear as you were walking out of a Holiday Inn. And then yeah. And then Steve Littman, one of the big concert promoters in town, said, look, you and your wife, come to the Australian Pink Floyd show. Just give this a chance. And I said, all right, fine. I will go ahead and I will do that. And so we came and we sat, and about 30 seconds into the show, and even though I think El Monstero is a lot better now, back in those days, that was my sort of introduction to tribute bands. And I was like, man, I have been missing the boat. I have really been missing the boat. As far as you're concerned, do you think that whatever stigma has been attached to tribute bands in the past, has that pretty much been eradicated?
I think so, 100%. I think a big reason for that is because some of these bands just don't tour anymore. Some of these bands have members who aren't with us any longer, and you're not going to ever see them live again, but people still want to hear that music live. In our situation with ELO, they it's more of a fact of that they just don't tour. They haven't been to St. Louis since the 80s, which I think their last show here was one that I think you attended at the arena with Hall & Oates. I think that was the last time they played here, which
actually,
was in like 80s.
Yeah, 1981, and I'll tell you, I didn't see it in St. Louis because I wasn't in St. Louis yet. I was all places in Omaha, and
okay.
you're right, and I still you can see me in the ELO shirt, my girlfriend there, and there's Daryl Hall and John Oates. We didn't make it all the way backstage for Jeff Lynne, but you're absolutely right, and that was the show where Jeff Lynne ended it with A Day in the Life, and people just about went out of their minds. Nobody saw it coming. He looked and sounded exactly like John Lennon. When I say look, not so much in the head area, but the way he stood. You know, John Lennon had that real sort of signature way that he stood at a microphone, and he did that and just blew the place away.
That's awesome. Yeah, to me, that makes total sense because I call ELO Beatles the Strings. You know, if you take the strings out of it and you take the 400 vocals that he adds on top of everything, it's Beatles song. The song Telephone Line, that chord progression is the exact chord progression from the song Something by the Beatles. He just put a different vocal melody over it and threw some strings on top of it. Voila. You know, to me, the song Mr. Blue Sky is very much like the song A Day in the Life.
A Day in the Life. Exactly. Exactly.
It's almost like two different songs combined into one.
Jeff, where do you see this thing in 3 to 5 years, or maybe even in the next 2 years?
So right now, we're just focusing on the Midwest. Probably do 3 or 4 a year here. I don't like to do more than that in town. But the plan is to just kind of try to extend our fan base out within like 4 or 5 hour drives from St. Louis, places that are like 4 or 5 hours away, Chicago, Nashville, Indiana, Oklahoma, places like that.
All right, let's give them the who, what, where, when, why. It's the night before Thanksgiving, Del Mar Hall. Do you have an opening act? How to get tickets? Just to throw it all at them.
Absolutely. So, yeah, Thanksgiving Eve, Del Mar Hall, which is right next door to the Pageant down in the Loop. It holds about the same amount of people that Mississippi Nights used to hold. Sort of a miniature version of the Pageant, really. We've got Steve Ewing from The Urge opening up the show.
He'll be doing his acoustic duo, but it's great because it's an acoustic duo, but Steve brings the same energy that he has with The Urge. Tickets, you can go to MrBlueSkyMusic.com to get them. You can go to our Facebook page, just search Mr. Blue Sky, a tribute to Electric Light Orchestra, click on the event, and the ticket link is right there. And or you can go to Ticketmaster and get them that way. I should mention Door 7, show at 8. I want to mention, too, sorry, JC, I want to mention, too, that this is a great option for people that want to go out the night before Thanksgiving, but they don't want to be out till the wee hours in the morning. Our show will be done at 11 o'clock. For people like myself, where my bedtime is like 11 o'clock most nights.
And that's a musician talking, folks. I am very, very excited about the fact that I will be in town for this show. And we'll see you then. Thanks.
JC, thank you so much for having me on. I appreciate it.
JC Corcoran Podcast.